And finally today, we want to bring you some of a conversation with Boston City Councilor and mayoral candidate Anissa Sibey-George. Last night at WBUR City Space, I hosted the second in our series of conversations with the final two candidates. Michelle Wu was Monday. You can find that conversation on our website. Now, if you are a regular Radio Boston listener, you already know that if Sibey-George is elected November 1st, she will be the first of many Boston mayoral things: elected woman, mother, person of color. That is also true for Wu. These intersecting identities have been a really key focus in the race between these two very accomplished women. And as such, we began last night's conversation with Sibey-George with the same question that we asked Michelle Wu. Who does she see herself as? Who does she tell herself she is? And how does that impact this important race?
It is significant to me in, I think, a different way than the public sees it. And I appreciate how important this election is to people who don't see a reflection of themselves generally in leadership and certainly not in the mayor's office. To me, it's much more personal, and it goes to my dad. You know, I have always had an interest in municipal government since I was a young girl, since I was a teenager. I was a little bit of a student activist during my high school years growing up here in Boston, and became engaged in and involved in my student council at my high school, Boston Tech. I like to, is this streaming anywhere? Are we looking, is there a camera? Streaming. Okay, go Tech Tigers. I like to say that out loud, which is now the O'Brien. And I found, I think for myself, a passion in leadership, in activism, in standing up for things that I thought were wrong or heading in the wrong direction or not being paid attention to in the way that they should. So I had this moment in time that my mother actually remembers much clearer than I do. We were at a big meeting around budget cuts around my school. Lots of people there. My mother says it was close to 5,000 people there. That might have been the rally, so she might be conflating two different things. But I remember we had a school community meeting with then Mayor Flynn, students, parents, and they were talking very specifically about budget cuts. And I said something to the effect of, you know, this is crazy. Like, government's supposed to work for the people. City Hall is supposed to work for the people and the kids. And I was a student activist. And went home and told my father, I'm going to run for mayor someday. And he said to me very plainly, an Arab girl with an Arab name will win nothing in this city. And so I have internalized that most of my life. And I appreciate the experiences my dad had, in particular, immigrating to this country as an Arab, as a Muslim, as a foreigner, trying to find his way both with my mother and my grandparents, but also within community, but then also within the wider world. And I'd say, because we are here on BU's campus, because we are on Comm Ave, how important Boston University was to him and to me. My father was a security guard at BU, and I think it was when he arrived here to work at BU that he met so many different people, and he just really loved being here. Anyway, I digress. So I have always seen this as an opportunity for myself, and I feel in many ways I'm fulfilling that promise I made, maybe to Ray Flynn, Mayor Flynn, Ambassador Flynn, to responding to the challenge that my father made to me. But also, as I got older, as I had real life experiences, as I, you know, went to college and eventually went to the workplace and eventually started teaching, that I saw, wow, like, there are important voices and experiences and things that are missing in local government, municipal government. And that's when I decided to run the first time for city councilor at large, because there were those experiences. And I think a lot about being a mother. I think a lot about being a business owner. I think a lot about being a teacher. And I believe that it's my experience in the classroom that has brought me to this moment, because what we do in our schools impacts so many people. So when I think about, I think I've gone off a little bit here, but when I think about who I am, when I think about what makes me tick and what my passion is, it's a couple of things. It's the city. It is the opportunity that Boston has given to me and given to my family, although not all of it was wonderful. Not all of it was sunshine and roses. And I believe that Boston is the center of the world. It's the center of the universe. It is a championship city that still has some failings. I experienced them firsthand, especially as a young kid. I know that my parents experienced them as immigrants, especially my dad. I experienced them today, for sure. But it is still the most fantastic place. And I want, I talk about it on the campaign trail a little bit. I refer to, you know, we talk a lot about the American dream, especially being a daughter of immigrants, the American dream. I talk about, and I find myself reflecting on the promise of Boston. So Boston's promise, what it meant to my family, my mother, when she immigrated here as a little girl, my father as a young man, and then building a family here in the city. And I feel that I am the fulfillment of the Boston promise. What it means to so many people, what it means to so many residents, whether they're born and raised, and we can talk a lot about that because that's been in the news a lot lately, whether they immigrated as my parents did many years ago, 47 years ago and plus for my mother, or they just arrived. I met a young man out here during the standout who just, you know, he's here for school. And Boston should fulfill that promise to everybody along that spectrum, whether they live their entire life here or just a moment.
So what is one way that the city failed you as a kid that makes you say never again?
I think that the city should never let down. Well, I think sometimes about school. I think about the academic failings that we've had as a district. And I went from Catholic grammar school to public high school, and both, I had some challenges in both. And although high school for me, especially because of the, I think the high school I went to, Boston Tech, go Tech Ties, it was a place that I felt so at home because of the diversity in my school, because I met kids who came from all over the city, because I met kids from different ethnic backgrounds, certainly racial backgrounds, religious backgrounds, which I went to a Catholic grammar school, so there wasn't that diversity in high school, in grammar school, the way there was at my high school. And I also felt at that moment I was able to find my voice. I still struggled academically after I graduated from high school and went on to college. I think that although I was a good student, college was a struggle for me. And I worry about our kids that we don't fully prepare for college and for work and for life. So I think, and I don't want to say that the city failed me. There are weaknesses in our system as a city. And I know with all of the opportunity I had, if there were weaknesses I experienced, that there were failings for other young people. There were failings for other families. I think about them in my work every single day. And every day I am committed to doing more and doing better, so that if there was a weakness for me and a failing for somebody else, that we're improving the system along the way.
I miss my mom. Mm-hmm. I miss her a lot. And one of the things we used to do, sometimes I would just get a chance to do something cool, right? Or that I never thought I would do, and I would call her and we would go, right? That was one of the things I would do with my mom. I've been thinking a lot about your father.
Mm-hmm. You make me cry. I'm not cry. Well, maybe I'm a little bit of a crier, but.
I am too. You know, the way you talk about him, and I have wondered, has there been some moment during this campaign where you wish you could have talked to him?
Every moment. And I'd say most especially, you are going to make me cry, because my father, my father worked at BU and he died at BU. And so I feel especially close to him. I did my makeup for this. Are you kidding me?
I'm sorry.
Someone get me a tissue.
Actually, could someone get her a tissue, please?
And I think that, when I'm at BU, when I'm around BU, I feel especially close to him. And actually, the day I announced my candidacy, because I think about him quite a bit, the day I announced my candidacy, there was a few of us in the car, and we were doing a whole bunch of, thank you. Thank you, Karen.
Perfect.
We were doing a whole bunch of, look at this. Look at it, in case I keep crying. I forgot to put that spray afterwards on my makeup so it wouldn't run all over my face.
It is
anyone,
not running.
If there's ugly crying, my friends in the audience, you got to let me know. We're going to have problems.
It's not running.
So when I, thank you. Yeah. So when I, listen, the people of Boston, you're going to get it all. You're going to get it all. The good, the bad, and the ugly crying. So after the announcement, I actually came here. I said, I want to come to BU because this was the last place that he was alive. And although I feel him with me every day, and I have a pendant with his picture. Anyway, so I think of him often, and I actually talk about him out loud often, because we had a complicated, I'm the oldest Arab daughter to an Arab Muslim man, and I was raised Catholic. So we had a lot of conflict over the years. And he pushed me. He inspired me. He made me crazy. But he motivated me sometimes in like sort of a roundabout way. He told me I couldn't be mayor, and I said, I'm going to show you. And I'm 47 years old, and I still think about my 15, 16-year-old self. I'm an adult with lots of accomplishments to run on, but I think about my father. I say he would have been my biggest cheerleader and also my probably one of my most thoughtful critics over the course of this campaign. He would have knocked more doors. He would have made more phone calls. He would have worked his tail off until the polls close at that exact moment. And I know that there are, and I meet people actually frequently enough that would say, oh man, your father, he would have been a machine over the course of this campaign. I actually received an email early in the campaign after one of my, appearances somewhere from a student who knew him and said, oh, please send your father my regards. He was an Italian student, foreign student. And he goes, we would talk about the soccer matches and that sort of stuff. And I love that. That I love. So anyone watching that knew my father, please send me a message, something good about him. Don't tell me he busted you in a dorm party or something like that. So I think that I try to internalize his strength along the way. He came from a place, Tunisia, lived a very different life than we do here in the United States, had very different experiences, left home. He's one of 17 children, grew up in a very traditional Arab village. My grandfather was the sheikh of Jalma, which is the place where my dad grew up. There is a female mayor of Tunis, the capital of Tunisia, and it was a big, this is a good story. They couldn't figure out what to call her because it was the first time they had elected a female, and I met her. It was the first time they elected a female mayor of Tunis, the capital city. They didn't know what to call her, and they're like, I don't know, Sheikha? And like, that was like, and they figured it out. And she is the sheikh of the Medina. She is the mayor of the capital city. And they've worked it out. Like, we'll be fine, Boston. Everyone's heads are exploding that we'll be fine. Anyway, so I really, you've got me all up in knots here.
So I'm going to ask you one more. I'm going to ask you one more, and then we'll go into some issues too. So identity is huge.
Yes.
Again, in this campaign. And you've taken all kinds of pushback on identity. You've taken pushback from people on self-identity.
Pushback is kind.
As a woman of color.
Pushback is a kind way to describe it.
So I want to ask about that, because I want to ask you what it is like to have someone else adjudicate your identity. And were you expecting this? And how have you taken care of yourself during it?
Well, I've had a good cry here with all of you. So lots of people and lots of powers have inserted themselves in this conversation about who I am, what I'm supposed to identify as. In fact, they've said what I should sound like throughout the course of this campaign. And it has been frustrating. It has been maddening. It has been hurtful. It has also been, in many ways, motivating and there's another word I want to use, but, Arabs, and so we talk about racial identity, Arabs have never counted. And that has been a difficult thing for my father in particular.
What do you mean by that, never counted?
Well, there's no box for us to check. So, and the BUR did a big story today. You can go read it. It's actually, I think, pretty well written. And Soraya spent a lot of time talking to me about that, talking to me about my father in particular, my story, his story.
That one was actually GBH.
Sorry.
But Anthony
corrected
one on you
corrected
today, too.
Fact check. That can go out in the tweet. Thank you. No. All right. Thank you.
You're
so,
welcome.
Yes. Well, whatever. There's a couple of stories out there. There's a
few
more.
Today.
Thank you. So, Arabs as a community have always been sort of in this no man's land, or shall I say nomads land. As we try to find our place in the world. And a lot of that relates to where in the world you've come from, whether it's North Africa in particular or the Middle East in particular. It also is tied to your religious beliefs and which religion you are. And it also ties to, I think, whether or not you wear a head cover as a female or dress in religious or cultural clothing. I think that has an impact on it as well. And I have had an absolute privilege in the way that I present, that I get to exist in lots of different rooms and lots of different cultural rooms. I can hang out in white rooms. I can hang out in Arab rooms. I can hang out in black rooms. I can hang out in Latino rooms. There are lots of places in which I can exist. The struggle I have had is in each and every one of those rooms, including the Arab rooms, especially as a non-Muslim and a non-Arab speaker, that I don't always have a seat at the table. And I struggle with that. And that's a personal struggle for me, recognizing and appreciating that how I present also creates a great deal of privilege for me. And I'll never deny that privilege. When I joined the city council in 2016, I was invited to the Electeds of Color meeting. And I finally felt, wow, like I'm going to be in a room with people who feel sometimes like me, set aside, not fully counting, not fully represented, not fully able to engage in the conversation. And I was grateful for that opportunity. And it was just, I went to the meetings, I engaged, I do a great deal of work, especially when I think about our communities of color, when I think about vulnerable populations, when I think about our schools, especially because our schools have impacted in such a negative way so many of our kids of color across our city, that I really have played a critical role in improving the opportunities for our families of color across the city. And so now I'm running for mayor, and there's this conversation. And it becomes frustrating at times because I really want to just do this work. And I've been criticized for not sharing publicly more of my personal story, more of my family's struggles, both mine personally and then my family's as a whole. But I also feel that the people of Boston who are suffering, who are struggling, who need services, who need government to act, who need their elected officials to engage in the work, deserve that. And it's not for me to reflect on my own story, although I appreciate how important that can be to the work, that I need to do the work. The part that's been even more hurtful than that conversation, because that's always been a part of my life, you know, on applications, and I know my teacher application came out this week around, oh, will you check the white box? Well, my mother is white. There is no Arab box, and I'm not black, and African American as a box is designated for black Americans, and I know that. And oftentimes, many applications would say African American of non-Arab descent. And so this year, or last year now, I was grateful to engage with the Arab American Institute in some of their national efforts around getting a box on the census so that Arabs could be counted. And then even within the Arab community, there's such diversity. But that's a different conversation, and there's some conflict around pan-Arabism versus being a Tunisian or a Moroccan or a Libyan. Throughout the rest of the region. The part that has been especially frustrating, especially in the last few weeks, was following a New York Times article, sort of having a little bit of fun with my Boston accent, which I'm very proud of. There was an article, an opinion piece in the Globe, which, and to simplify it, called me a racist because I speak with a Boston accent. And I found that hateful, frustrating, ignorant, hurtful, and I say hurtful twice on purpose because it was very hurtful. That is, my father was an immigrant, and I think about my father, and I'm sure my mother came here so young. I'm sure it was also her experience and my grandparents' experience, but my father came here as a young man, spoke very little English. My mother happened to speak French. That's how they communicated, and had a heavy, heavy accent. And I know as a convenience store worker, as a taxi cab driver, as a hotel worker, that he was mocked for his accent, that he was told to go home because of his accent, that he was called a towel head because of his accent, that he was called a terrorist because of his accent. And then to have the Globe, a major Boston newspaper, come after me personally because I speak with and am proud of my Boston accent made me absolutely bananas. And my team will say, Anissa, don't let them know they got under your skin. That got under my goddamn skin because I, thank you. We wouldn't accept any media fat shaming me We wouldn't accept any media poking fun on, but that is part of me. And yes, in my victory speech, I had a crowd on election night, a crowd of hundreds of people. And we had so much fun with that damn commercial. It was fun. And to turn something that was fun into something nasty was hurtful. It was not unnecessary, is too light of a word to use. I think it was, I have nothing else to say about it.
Boston City Councilor and mayoral candidate Anissa Sibe George there speaking at a live WBUR City Space town hall last night. That is just an excerpt of the full hour conversation, and she did have more to say about the issue, including what she would say to somebody who might think that her accent means they could be less considered under her leadership. I asked her that, and about a variety of issues, and you can hear the full conversation on our website, radioboston.org, alongside our Monday conversation with her challenger, Boston City Councilor Michelle Wu.